This is a pretty fun experience and a pretty fun, unique opportunity for both me, the panelists, and I guess everybody here. We Distribute is a news publication. It's really just a blog that I started by myself to cover the developments and evolution of the Fediverse. It's been around longer than I'd care to admit, and it's been through several evolutionary phases. We regularly host a podcast. We interview creators within the space, people building platforms, asking about their history, their experience, and what their vision is for the network. Joining me today are the panelists that all spoke today. So I just kind of want to open up a conversation. You know, generally with our podcast, it's a pretty relaxed vibe. We're not here to put anyone in the hot seat, not even you, Evan. What we're really looking to do is to have a natural, organic conversation that, you know, reflects what's top of mind for everybody and what's going on. So I guess I just want to start off with if everyone could reintroduce themselves, starting with Boris.
Hi, my name is Boris Mann.
Hi, my name is Boris Mann, in microphone version. Live here in Vancouver, have been a technologist building on open source and open systems and connecting people for the last 20 plus years. I have two main things that I'm working on right now. One is with the Industrial Research Lab, Ink and Switch, working on local first and encryption and malleable software. And two is working on growing the Atmosphere ecosystem, the community growth around App Protocol that is not Blue Sky.
I'm Anuj Ahuja. I'm based out of Seattle, and currently my focus is on how to make all of this protocol stuff make sense to normal people who don't care about this stuff in the first place. I'm the executive director and CEO of A New Social, where we're building services and tools around that, and I'm also writing on my blog.
My name is Evan Podromo. I am co-author and maintainer of ActivityPub and research director at the Social Web Foundation.
You just heard from me, but Janet Bertessi at Princeton University, sociologist of technology and a conscientious objector.
Chris Alemany, I guess head president, whatever, of the Society of Open Social Servers of British Columbia, socialbc.ca. I'm also a technician at Vancouver Island University and a recovering politician.
I'm Johannes Ernst. I'm wearing a whole bunch of hats. I've been involved in this space for something like over 20 years, starting with user-controlled identity, something we sort of lost over the 20 years rather than gained. I'm currently running Fedi Forum, which is an online conference, which I failed to announce in the announcement section today because I wasn't here yet. Next one coming up in October. It's not on the website yet. Then I have a startup called Dazzle Labs that's built some stuff around this. I've been helping put a Fediverse developer network together. And I've been writing a thing called Fedi Test, which is a test suite for the Fediverse. And I'm now apparently helping putting the ActivityPub Rocks website on a standing that is not several stone ages out of date. So if you have an opinion, how should we talk to the world about ActivityPub, because that's the landing page for when you read the spec. Please join our GitHub and leave your issues in your pull request. Thank you.
Cool. Well, thank you all for being here. This is super cool to be able to actually talk to y'all in tandem up on a stage like this. Normally, we'd probably be in like a Zoom call or something like that. So thank you very much. I kind of want to open with just a general conversation about, you know, where we feel the network is at today, its strengths, its weaknesses. I think like sometimes we look at the network and there's like a huge burst of activity, like a crazy amount of things are happening with new platforms or new concepts or even just new ways of doing things. Like there's all kinds of really cool apps on the network. I think sometimes too there are lulls and people are like, I'm not really sure if anything's happening here. And I just kind of want to speak to like where are our heads at regarding how the network is in 2025.
Yeah, I absolutely think that we have periods of surges, right? So when Elon Musk bought X, that was a time of huge surge, a lot of activity happening, a lot of announcements happening. And then last fall, during the after the election, there was another surge of activity, probably more in the blue sky space, or as I like to call it, blue sky plus AT proto, which some people...
Okay, Richard Stallman.
But I think, like, it can feel... And right now we are in a lull, right? There is not as much frenetic activity happening now. I think it's important to remember that when we're in those moments of frenetic activity, we're like, I wish there was time to actually build. I wish there was time to organize. I wish there was time to plan. This is that time, right? This is our time, like fisher people repairing their nets, ready for the next surge, right? We need to be doing the work right now to be building the organizations, building the groups, so when the next opportunity comes up, we're better able to take advantage of it.
I totally disagree.
Oh, okay.
There's a ton of stuff happening.
Yeah.
But it's usually stuff that doesn't come into these spaces. Is anyone in the room having discussions with their friends and family about what services they might use? Is some of the stuff that's happening in the world raising questions about where you're buying your food or where you're getting your information? That's all happening right now. So the other half of this is thinking about what our approach to this is. Having been around for a while and gotten more or less excited and more or less burnt out of some of these topics over a couple of decades now, I was reminded by someone that this is, in fact, the work of lifetimes. I believe that we are still, the Sovereign Tech Fund in Europe does a really good job of talking about sewers and aqueducts and infrastructure, none of which one gets particularly upset about if it like takes a while to get built out. And I was reminded again recently by someone who said this to me, who's like, you know this is gonna like take more time. And so I think the question becomes of who else do you recruit? What are the small things that you do? How do you change minds? How do you get better at explaining? So the work doesn't stop, but we hand it off. We have a different focus on different things, and we have to get out of the mindset that any one of us can do it alone, which is, I think, a consistent message 100%. That we've had, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's kind of interesting is, especially in decentralized spaces, you see a lot of like reproduction of efforts amongst different people. Or sometimes, alternatively, you'll see one person see not a lot going on and they decide to take it upon themselves. I think sometimes like crystallizing that into like an institutional effort as well as a community effort is very much a challenge. You know, I think IFTAS is a great example of one person saying, I'm going to take this on myself and try to figure out how to do trust and safety for a decentralized network. That's very challenging, and even just coordinating individual people together to figure out how to make the thing work is no small effort.
Can I add to that? I think I agree with or piggyback on what Boris was saying, which is that because we're also in a period of tremendous economic uncertainty and political uncertainty, and a lot of people in the tech industry who would otherwise rely on their six-figure jobs and then, you know, come home and code for whatever it is they want to do as a passion project on the side, no longer have that income coming in or no longer have that job security.
Yeah.
Certainly among many of the organizations I've seen, like the layoffs across not only the private and also the public tech sectors, NASA being the original public interest tech company organization, we're seeing like dramatic reorganizations. And that also means a reorganization of how we've typically considered the work needs to get done in the open source community. And some organizations have made the leap more successfully to nonprofits that are self-sustaining or to small businesses or B Corps, et cetera. But I think we're going to see a lot more experimentation in this space, not just with the technical tools, but with the kind of organizational and economic arrangements behind them that are going to enable some form of longevity or enable people to work on these projects that they care about.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's very much a concern for the given moment with our network. To put it mildly, I think a large part of the Fativerse is predicated on free labor in one way or another, whether it's open source development, whether it's running servers and infrastructure, whether it's, you know, moderation itself is like its own can of worms. And so I think, like, I've said this expression before, it's a little distasteful, but it does often feel sometimes as though we're all begging for change out of the same collection bin. And I think, like, one thing I would really love to see is a proper economy or proper monetization to the point that we can actually support people to do the things they want to do full time.
Yeah, just to build on a little bit what others have said, I think, you know, we're kind of coming, I think, to an inflection point socially, globally. And like Evan said, you know, it's really about trying to build these tools. I mean, there's so many people in the room here that are building utilities and tools that can facilitate this stuff. And it's about meeting that moment. And there will be multiple moments. But I think in general, you know, we are seeing people looking for those changes, those different platforms or those different ways to be able to connect with people because the current systems are essentially breaking down.
Yeah.
They're breaking down under their own weight. So people will flee. We've seen that already. And I think we just have to be ready for them as much as we can.
Yeah. And I mean, that can definitely be a challenge. I think a good example to point back to is when people started protesting Reddit over the Spez changeover and Reddit trying to take things private and the Apollo app being taken off. A lot of people suddenly surged into Lemmy communities as an alternative. On the one hand, it's like super cool to see because, like, hey, suddenly very small communities are surging with users that are excited to talk and engage and connect with each other. But at the same time, like, sometimes these communities were started by people that, like, didn't really anticipate having more than 100 users. And so I think from the instance admin's perspective, that is very much a real challenge to figure out, how do I keep the lights on?
I want to add one thing to this, which is that we often do not acknowledge just how audacious this project is that we are embarking on. Is something generally new, and let's contrast this to something that the way the technology world usually works. There's a playbook for technology companies. You have some new technology, you patent it, or you get control it in some fashion, and then you put it on the market, you sell it, you sign up partners. There's a playbook to this, how this works, right? None of this playbook applies here, because if we applied it, we would end up in all the places that we don't want to end up. So there has to be a very different playbook, which is one where we work with more people outside of our organizations rather than inside of our organizations. And there is no manager. You know, imagine for a second if there is a technical problem at a big social media platform, and it's an architecture problem, and what happens is, well, the chief architect listens to a bunch of alternatives and says, we shall use alternative 3D, and by next Monday, you all implement this. Yep. And if the guy is any good, it will work, okay? How do we do this here? We don't have the slightest idea. There is no chief architect, and there cannot be a chief architect. We don't want to have a chief architect. So there's organizational structures we have to build. And I think, going back to your original question for this round here, where are we? I think we are about as far as we could have gone by a bunch of people, mostly geeks, working mostly independently of each other,
yep,
based on some group chats and, you know, some shared specs. But in order to move forward, we need to have more organizational innovation that enables them to deliver more value, more synchronized and coordinated value to people who appreciate the value without centralizing it. And to my knowledge, I'm not a sociologist, but there is probably not that many templates in the world where we say this is where that ever happened.
Yeah.
Maybe the civil rights movement or something like that.
I mean, do you want the answer to that? I mean, yeah, sure, this whole field. But that's another problem, actually, that we're going to encounter, and it's very similar to the problems of hyperscaling also. Once the five people in a room and, like, they get an investment portfolio, you know, thrown at them, and all of a sudden it's 500 people or 1,000 people with 8 global offices, and that's why Pinterest kind of stalled out. But we see this problem, actually, in social movements as well, particularly because a lot of those movements want to adopt a kind of political framework at the same time, which I see in open source and a lot of these communities too. We want to build these tools to federate, to create this sort of federated structure in which there can be no overlord. And we also want to have a social structure that mirrors that. And this is precisely the problem that confronted the civil rights groups as well. There's a great book about it called Freedom is an Endless Meeting, which if that sounds like familiar.
It doesn't sound like freedom.
Should. I mean, so we do study this, and it isn't an issue because you have to be able to move people to, there are organizational structures that work better and worse for decision making at different kinds of scales. And this is one of the things I've observed with NASA teams as well, like when is kind of the limit of being able to do full governance by consensus and when you need to move to more organizational structure. We saw this as a difficulty with Wikipedia as well once they started adding archons. So we know that you have to make changes to the organization as you scale. We also know that those changes may be antithetical to the politics of the technology. And we also know that the way you organize your team predicts the kind of technology you build because of Conway's Law, right? I wrote a book about that too. So like the way you've organized that team will then get built into the system. So those are the problems we keep coming up against, and they're classic problems. There isn't a single obvious solution, but I think the first solution is to realize we're in this spot that like everyone gets into this spot.
Yep.
And so we have a couple of different options for moving ahead, and we're gonna have to make a decision as a group about which way we do that.
And that's a great lead into my next question, although it's a little bit vague. I want to.
There's one more segue in here.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Snaps. Yes, yes, yes. Simon Wardley has a framework called Wardley Maps that actually maps stages of technology, and that you'd need different organizational structures for these different things. So definitely check that out. I'd say the other thing is that the open source movement is dead.
Ish.
It's dead. I'll say that very bombastically on purpose for a different thing like that, right? I've felt relatively unmoored for a period of time. That's because that's what I came up in. Protocols is a slightly different thing. We see lots of these things where there is protocol work to be done, and then there's benevolent dictator for life on a piece of code implementation. And then you're like, oh, fuck, it's governance all the way down. And then somewhere there's the operator model of running the piece of software, like, right? Like, all of these things exist simultaneously, including that the operator model actually needs to be closer to, like, we have a checklist, no one loses their account, those other things like that, but if you want to do new things, you need the bespoke model of try stuff, right? And all of these things exist simultaneously. I just want to again say this, is we're not acknowledging the social movement or the organizational techniques from people who are rooted in working with technology. And that the platforms themselves are platforms for movement making and communication and everything else like that, right?
Right.
So I'd like to offer the DWeb principles as something to look at. I help run a local DWeb node along with Emily McGill. If you go to getdweb.net/principles, read them. They don't talk a lot about technology, but they say things like distributed benefits for all. I'm like, that sounds like open source. Human agency over technology, yes. And then it has a bunch of other things around climate change and other things like that. So I encourage everyone to actually upgrade our principles and do a slightly different framing than whether it's in PHP or not.
I already have a microphone. So taking this sort of acknowledgement of where we're at, and I don't want to like just focus on the negative here, because I think there's a lot of positive things here too. Where do we want to go as far as the Fediverse, as far as development, as far as the future of the social web? Obviously, some element brought all of us together here to meet today, and we all have different distinct visions that may or may not click together. What is your vision of where we want to go?
I think bigger. I think a bigger network with more people. We're talking about bringing joy, and that joy is connecting with people that we care about, that we know, our friends, our family, our neighbors, our colleagues, right? I recognize that there are many people in the Fediverse for whom the Fediverse is a refuge, right? It is a place that they can be away from friends, family, colleagues, neighbors. But for others of us, bringing our communities to the Fediverse or connecting the Fediverse to our communities is the next step in joy. And it also, you know, if we think this is important, mm-hmm. it is a responsibility. We can't just say, tough shit for everybody else, right? If you're not here, you're losing out, right? I think that we do have, it's sounding a little messianic, but like I do think that we have some responsibility to help people find the kind of freedom that we want for ourselves.
So for me, I think one of the, I don't want to say biggest issues, but I think one of the biggest things that's holding us back is the fact that there's, even though we have a bunch of instances and different clients and everything, everything kind of looks and works the same and doesn't have its own personality or its own niche solutions.
Yeah.
Everything kind of takes the same shape. And the way that I think this should be working and the way I think you capture different communities like that have specific needs is not just, you know, like thousands of Mastodon instances. It's niche software that solves specific problems for specific groups of people and connects to the greater network regardless of the software that they're using. And so I think the place that we're at where there's just a lot of different servers that just look exactly the same and act the same and do the exact same things make it very hard for someone to come in because they look at the landscape and they're like, what community do I belong in? And does this server make sense for me? And I think most users don't want to think like that. No. I think most of them just want to look at this app or this specific client or this specific piece of software works exactly the way that I need to do it in the way that I want to share or consume things. And they can pick that specific piece of software to tap into the network. And I feel like we're just not doing a good job of that. We're consistently building generalized software for everyone that works for everyone so we can capture like the next billion people when that those billion people should be separated in different niche software that works specifically for them. So that's where I'm hoping this is going, is not like 50 other things that look like Mastodon or Blue Sky or Twitter, but things that work like specifically for a certain group and just focus on that group and perfect it for that group of people is where I'm hoping this goes.
I like that.
I want to add to this. So imagine for a second, if you can, there, social media as we know it hasn't been invented. Come. And you come up with this idea and you say, oh, you know, we could connect people somehow. They can do stuff together. How likely is it that you would come up with Twitter? And the answer is basically zero. At least every time I ask this question, nobody's ever said that this is very obviously the right answer, the way we connect with people. The reason why we have what we have in social media is for one reason only, which is an excellent medium to show you lots of ads. That's the only reason why we have these feeds the way they are. So, Jazz here is not believing me, but I will debate you later. Okay. So, secondly, now we have enough infrastructure where innovating in social software is much, much simpler than if you had to start from scratch. For one, you can piggyback on an existing network. Now is an incredible opportunity for people who are not so much technologists, also we still need those, but people who care about groups and what they do together to say, what's the ideal software we can think of to support this kind of group and build it on that. And I think there is, for the entrepreneurial people among us, including the ones that want to make big bucks, there is an incredible opportunity here. Personally, I'm not opposed to somebody make big bucks to creating some amazing technology for supporting a particular kind of, you know, group that is under-supported today, if these people are willing to give them lots of money because they're so much more productive, for example. So there is one thing we often don't talk about in this space is just how many amazing entrepreneurial both nonprofit and for-profit opportunities are, and we need to actually get the entrepreneurs into the space. I live in the middle of Silicon Valley. Almost nobody has heard anything about the opportunities that exist for startup around here. Everybody talks about AI, and I really don't understand why we need the 10,000 startup doing something in AI that may not actually ever work. But there's so much opportunity around here. So bring all of your entrepreneurial friends. Not all of them have to become overlords, you know?
Only some of them.
I think it's the innovation piece that that really excites me, and I see this coming out, if it comes out positively, what it will do, much like the browser wars of, you know, the late 90s, 2000s, finally there was sort of a peace, mm-hmm. and innovation started to happen, and that was when, you know, the entrepreneurs started to really build things that they thought people might be interested in, and then we ended up with, you know, what we ended up with. But as long as we can create those spaces and those technologies and those utilities, then, you know, then we're able to build upon something that, you know, it makes sense from the base level, from the protocol level, but we can really give it to the innovators to do that. And that's what will bring us to, you know, the ultimate end goal of ensuring that people have a place to come to and find use in, you know, ActivityPub or AT Proto or the Fediverse or whatever you end up calling it. That won't matter, because it'll just be about whatever, you know, innovative use comes out to the public, right?
That's a fair point.
I think also, as we, you know, personally, I'd like to see big tech tumble. I'd like to, you know, there's a bunch of those companies I hate with the fire of a thousand suns, and we'll never use their products again. But the thing that's so interesting for me about Fedi and about ActivityPub and the AT protocol and so on is that they enable a kind of scale that doesn't require platformization, doesn't require capture. So actually, despite the fact that, you know, it's growing, it's not one system that's growing. It's that the protocol is being used in lots of different places, and that there's an incredible number of Mastodon servers out there now that you could join, or PixelFed or whatever else. So what I think is interesting about that is it allows more smaller communities control over their data and where it goes. But what we haven't given people are the tools to understand how to exert that control. And I know this because in commercial social networks, the problem of moderation is a solved problem because it's a displaced problem.
Yeah.
It is somebody's job in some African country somewhere or in the Philippines to look at pictures of people getting beheaded so you don't have to. It is somebody else's job to clean up after the racist and sexist comments so you don't have to see them. And so when everyone flooded over to Mastodon, they were like, wait a minute, this place is racist. A lot of that had to do with the fact that, A, they expected a kind of cleanup operation, like what happens in these other systems, where that dirty work is displaced out of sight and out of mind. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have to deal with moderation, we don't have to deal with racism or sexism on these systems. We do. But we have to think about that as a social problem and not just as a technical problem, because the magic of these commercial systems is that it makes it seem like it's a technical problem you can solve. But these are social problems that technologies can only provide a Band-Aid for or displace. So when I think about how we grow this network or how we grow this community or how we move to the next billions and billions and give more people control over their data and take the power back from those companies, in order to do that, we need to let people know or teach people how to self-govern, because that is a property that they have forgotten. Mm-hmm. And especially if you look at places like the United States, where I've lived for the last 25 years, thank you. You know, I've lived somewhere where the social contract is so frayed that people don't know how to do that work anymore. They don't know how to do that work anymore. And I also, you know, in some of the work I'm doing on remote collaboration and things that happened during the pandemic, we noticed that a lot of organizations that did try, that were governance, community governance oriented, that had to transition online, really struggled. And they eventually fell back into the sort of benevolent dictator for life, you know, thing, which is just a sort of quick and easy way of solving the fact that actually consensus online is hard. Consensus, yeah. Period, is hard, but doing it online is especially hard. And so if we don't develop the kind of social tools and enable that to spread, I don't want to say scale, because I don't think that's a scale problem, it really is a spreading problem, then we're not going to have the kinds of communities, we're not going to be seeding the kinds of communities that will be vibrant and the kinds of places where people find joy, or the kinds of people, places where people find purpose in caring for each other and their communities and their social systems.
That's an amazing answer. Thank you. So I think when we look at the network, it's kind of a funny thing, right? Like, we see the potential of what could be. You know, I think for a lot of us, the value proposition is not just, you know, a fun little space to talk with your friends. It is almost more of a social movement in the sense that we could single-handedly, or multi-handedly, I guess, if we stand hand-in-hand, transform the face of the internet. And that sounds that sounds like a Don Quixote tilting at windmills kind of thing, but I think like we have the opportunity and the intellect and the skills and the creativity to build something on the web that is 100% new, building on some of the old lessons that came before. I think like I would love to know, from your own perspectives, what is something about the Fediverse that drew you to it? What is something that excited you about it? And what is something you hope to see in the network someday?
That's three big questions. Yeah,
so what I saw was a system that, in fact, modeled the networks that were starting to merge already. So I have been doing remote collaboration for 22 years now. I got connected to the concept of open source, which lived on mailing lists, etc. We went through lots of different things. So I had been living in this kind of networked org model that is now becoming clear, especially post-pandemic, of like, and it's like, oh, right, like that's actually right. This is how this should work. That this connective tissue of different locuses of control or interoperating and other things like that. So I think that's the model that is then there. At the same time, I think we've regressed in learning how to do some of these things again because you've been disintermediated by the commercial platforms in different ways. Some of the work that I've had to do locally in Vancouver, in BC, in Canada, is to teach people that not all software is built in Silicon Valley. And then the next bit of teaching, you can build your own software. What does it mean as a group, as a city, as a province, as a country? Canada has some challenges. Anything built by the Canadian government, does anyone know what the name of the license is? So in the US, it's all public domain, which is why we have amazing NASA images in it. Does anyone know the name of the license? King's copyright. Used to be Queen's. We're on King's right now, right? So we have an extra challenge in Canada where we're like, so our money, we paid for it. And then you're like, no, it's the government's. I'm like, how do I explain to you that Canada is an amazing powerhouse of open source software that you literally are like, yeah, that's zero. Oops. So I'm just going to keep coming back to a bunch of these, like, you're probably right. You're not crazy for thinking that things seem off. Like, tell your friends and you know, literally, can you get your... I love your entire pitch. I think there's overlap with D-Web and a bunch of other things like that, right? Where I'm like, can you convince a small group of people around you to not use Google? Like, pick something, right? Like... We literally can do that now. We have some of these tools that are hostable enough, usable enough, and so on. And we just kind of got to get on with it and then be like, people are like, well, I want this to be better. Guess what? You have agency. Write a $500 check. And the young new grad who needs work, hand him $500. And we'll make it a little bit better.
Uh-oh. It's a telephone, a game of telephone, I mean microphone. So I like reading science fiction, and one of the persistent sort of things that happens in certain stories is when the evil overlord is overthrown and the revolutionary forces to mean well go out to the serfs and tell them all these things they can now do, the serfs react with incomprehension because they have never thought along these lines. What, I could be educated? I could not go to the overseer and
this seems like this is dangerous. How can I possibly get together with other people and figure out what to do about this field? In many ways, so this is one of the nice things about science fiction, is because it can sort of put a light on these kinds of situations. And in many cases, I think we have been educated, and we continue to be educated worse and worse, to be more and more passive instead of actually having agency. I went to one of these Tesla takedown protests the other day, and I'm talking to people, and everybody, by and large, says, "What's the plan?" And I am an unconference guy. I run one for one. I say, "Why are you waiting for somebody? Have a plan. You have plenty of brains. You talk to the next guy over there, and you figure out what you're going to do next week." It generally is met with incomprehension. We have been training this out of people, and we need to get back to this one. And that is not just a technology and a social media problem. That's a problem on all sets of society. And I think politics, in a way, is, you know, in the U.S. particularly, but probably everywhere, is basically the politics we have as a consequence of this. So I think if we teach people, encourage, starting with our kids, that you have just as much agency as the next guy. The next guy who seems to have more is just because they went after and you didn't. Mm-hmm. Basically, you have agency. Do things, okay? And then once the mindset flips, I can do things with my friends, then all of these things have toppled over. But of course, the forces who are who are discouraging agencies are the same people who would like everybody to be compliant, because otherwise how could the overlord get whatever the overlord wants if you weren't compliant?
There's two things that I sort of came to a realization of when I was a city councilor. The two sort of overarching issues in the world that at least in my perception, one, climate change, which obviously is existential, and the second one was decolonization, and decolonization of all of our systems. And I think that's essentially what made me sort of have that aha moment when I joined Mastodon and realized what Activity Pub was about, was this was the decolonization of social media. And it's the decolonization of being able to connect socially across this thing that we built called the internet, and really gain our agency back. So that's kind of what drives me is being able to create these communities again. You know, you have to convince people that yes, you know, there is an internet outside of Facebook. Literally, people just think that the internet is Facebook because that's what they open up on their phone. That's what they open up on their computer every day.
I mean, there was even a time where Facebook was providing like free internet access, and Facebook exactly. was the internet to that group
yeah,
of people.
Yeah, literally becomes the internet for people. So we've, you know, we're trying to wrest that back. It's not easy, but I think that's the main thing is as long as we can create those spaces and show people that there is an alternative, then we can decolonize those spaces.
So I was a sysop in the 90s. I ran my high school BBS. And just as anyone else did, I feel like all I did today was talk about how old I am. But yeah, so, and what I found when I joined the Fediverse was like, oh, this is what that was like, to be on those BBSs and you're there with other people and you can hang out in your own little crew and you could like play Space Invaders games with like the friends in your class, and then you can talk to other people, and these spaces felt comfortable, they felt local, they felt like we belonged, and there was that kind of connection. So I loved that when I first moved to the Fediverse, and also because then I get to own my own data. I get to say where my data goes, and it's not enriching anyone else. And if I get online and I'm upset about something Elon is doing and I toot about it, I'm not enriching him by tweeting about it. And everyone being like, "Raw, yeah, I hate that too." You know, like, we've built enragement machines. I mean, Tristan Harris gave that talk, what was it, like in 2017, where he's like, the only measurable relationship between emotion and engagement on site is outrage. That's it. all that Facebook experiment stuff that my friends ran where they were like, oh, you feel happier when you look at other happy things? No, you don't. You just feel more outraged. And that's more, like, so we built an outrage machine. So the second thing was, oh, first it was like a BBS. This is great. And secondly, I feel like I am home and I don't have to be outraged all the time. And the third thing I loved about the Fediverse, these are all things I want to see continue, is it's not monetized. Even though, like, we need a monetization strategy to make sure people can work on it and so on. But, like, the whole purpose of so many of these tech sites now is just to make other people money. It's not even so that it works, okay? So those of us who come from a certain generation of engineers or software engineers, you'd want to build a thing that, like, does a thing. It does what it says on the tin. And if it doesn't say what it doesn't, if it doesn't do what it says on the tin yet, you're like, oh, well, just wait a minute, we have a plan for it. No. So my friend Ben Shostakovsky, who's at Penn, just wrote this great book, Behind the Startup, and he was embedded with a startup in Silicon Valley that was an AI startup. And their investors were like, well, you have to meet these growth targets, okay? So what that meant is all their software engineers had to scale up the team. So all the software engineers were in interviews with new engineers all the time, so much that they didn't have time to write the software. So instead, what they did is hired a crew of people in the Philippines through an outsourcing agency to be the AI behind the scenes that did the matching between people as they came to the site. And then because that was a little bit glitchy and didn't totally work very well, they hired a bunch of other people, mostly middle-aged women in Nevada, through a call center. I am not making this up. You could call them if you were having trouble interacting with the website, which wasn't an AI, it was actually people in the Philippines who were pretending to do the AI while the people in San Francisco were too busy interviewing. And this is how they became a billion-dollar unicorn. It never worked. It never worked by any technical standards. Now, I work with people at NASA who have to make a thing land on Mars perfectly at the first time. And then here we are watching, like, Starship blow up for the 11th time. They're like, oh, it'll get to orbit eventually. No worries. Just, you know, keep the money going, right? There's a different monetization strategy going on around these everyday commercialized tools because they're investment vehicles. So we do need to find a way to keep the Fediverse sustained. We need a way to keep it weird. We need a way to keep our identities fragmented. The fact that I can have one group to talk about this and another server to talk about that, those things don't have to come together in anyone's grand identity database is actually, I think, a plus in my book. But what we have to make sure that we don't do is produce the kinds of systems that become so torqued they are unrecognizable in terms of their aims, because we have created these monstrous organizations behind them whose only job is to make money for investors. That doesn't mean I think there isn't a role for profit generation in the industry. It doesn't mean that I don't think that there's other ways in which we can, you know, have profitable industries. But it does mean that I would like to see technology work by people for people, again, and have that be embedded in the social context that it has to be responsible to and not to some investment vehicle.
Okay.
One of the questions was what brought you to the Fediverse,
yeah,
right? And for me, it was a long journey, but okay, it started when I was this naive computer science student in college. I was blogging about tech. I cared deeply about Android, as I mentioned. I used to be an Android developer and open source and all this kind of stuff. But because I was an Android developer, I was using a lot of Google products, including Google Plus. And there, because I was blogging and I was communicating with a lot of people, I had like a huge set of communities there. Like, I think I had like 150,000 followers, various communities from tech to hip hop to basketball, to, like, you name it, right? Like, every interest that I'd ever had was on Google Plus for the first few months. And then over time, because that network effect didn't really happen on that site, it started to dwindle, and then eventually Google did the Google thing and they shut the whole thing down. And there was this moment back then, I didn't have the vocabulary for it, but there was this moment where I was like, why can't I just go to Twitter with these same people? Like, why can't this be easier for me to go? And by the way, this is why Bounce exists. Because there was that moment where I was like, why can't I just go and take these people that I care about and care about me, and we've been communicating for the last like 3 years, I'm gonna lose them. And I didn't have the vocabulary back then, and I'd literally given up on social media. Like, I was on Twitter here and there. I used, obviously, like, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, but I wasn't active on anything. And it wasn't until, you know, I learned about ActivityPub and AT Proto and Noster where I was like, oh, there is a vocabulary for this, and there are smart people trying to solve these exact problems. And I think that's what brought me here, is, like, I never want to lose my people again.
No.
And that's, you know, that's why I'm here.
You know, I relate to that a lot. It's kind of funny because for me, I was a MySpace user back in, you know, 2006, 2007, and during that time, a lot of people were moving over to Facebook. And it was kind of this weird realization that half of my social graph was straggled across two different websites. It struck me then, like, how odd it was that neither one could follow or interact with each other. And we didn't really have a way to describe that at the time. It was just a factor of thing. It's just a factor of nature. Yeah, but it's funny to think that, like, this is less of a problem today in the sense of what we do have available for, you know, an open social web. And it's kind of funny that, nevertheless, we have these massive silos that the effect is still the same.
There was a time at the beginning of the web, beginning of the internet, where it was framed very negatively compared to other parts of society, right? So, you know, they talk about new media as in contrast to newspapers or television or radio, et cetera. And somewhere in there, we stopped comparing the internet to those old media because those old media disappeared or they became part of the internet. And I think there is a point. One thing that I want for the Fediverse is we get to the point where we stop comparing it to Big Tech, to other kinds of social networks, because we have either absorbed them or outgrown them, right? And that is, I know that feels really hard to believe that it could happen, right? That we'll ever be anything except we can grow beyond a protest movement,
sure,
to a building movement, to something bigger than just being angry at other stuff. And I believe that we can go beyond framing ourselves as not that and become this. And I think that I think that we'll get there, and that's what I'm looking forward to in the Fediverse.
Hell yeah.
As I think Christine said this at Fediforum, is like, we can't win without joy. I think those are the, right? It's like that's exactly it. Right now we're trying to find people from anger of like, don't you hate Twitter? Don't you hate Elon? Don't you hate Mark Zuckerberg? And it's like, no, maybe, yeah, leading with joy is the future of what we're trying to build. Yeah.
I think with that in mind, you know, what's something on the Fediverse that gives you joy, whether it's an app or an experience or community? You know, what is something that gives you joy, Anuj?
Something that gives me joy
on the Fediverse?
For me, it's, I think I mentioned this in my presentation, where I randomly started a Pixel Fed account just for like my hip-hop vinyls, and it turns out like there's actually like a community for that. Like, I didn't realize people would give a shit about that, and it turns out not just on Pixel Fed or the Fediverse, but also on Blue Sky. And it was like, you know, I'm not like big on that stuff, but the fact that I could find a community about such a niche thing in what seems like a small place just kind of made me really happy, because it's an outlet that I didn't think I could have.
Yeah.
And that's like one of many ways, but that one very specifically, because it's something that I enjoy talking to people about, and not a lot of people in my personal life like to talk about it. And so like when I post it online and people start talking to me about it, it feels nice and gives me that like
warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, it's like, wow, I can have these conversations with people in like a much more meaningful way than just like posting it on Blue Sky or Mastodon and nobody replying to it. And it's like, no, there's a community here that I can actually engage with here. But many other reasons, but that's like one that really stands out to me, because I was not expecting that to be a thing.
That's really cool.
So, yeah.
So the thing that gives, and this is sort of one another removed, but I see so much possibilities. Yeah. The thing I look at is, oh, there's all these things that I could at least come up with a dozen projects that are worthwhile doing in one way or another. So it's not joy of thing, but joy of expectation of thing.
Mm.
And let me throw in one building on what you said earlier about the remote owners or investors. There's something we rarely think about, and it has implications. Imagine we tend to complain about venture capitalists and what they do to companies, right? But look at where the money comes from venture capital. It very often comes, for example, from big pension funds, right? And they have to return a large amount of return on investment to take the money from the pension fund. Where does the pension fund get its money from? It gets it from people like you and me who have retirement savings. So here, consider this. Here I am. I am putting my money in my retirement fund, and I hope to have a high return on investment so I can retire. The result of which that it gets into venture capital, the result of which is that they do surveillance capitalism, screwing me in the process. How does this make any sense? Wouldn't it make much more sense if I could decide where that trade-off is? Yeah, you can have a bit more surveillance capitalism if I can retire better, or a little less surveillance capitalism so I cannot retire as well. The loop between the loop that we have here between action and consequence is way too long. Now, coming back to the excitement, it would be so nice if we could shorten that loop. If I wasn't an investor in my own social and media experience by way of so many pension funds and so many intermediate funds, that when my intent is completely subverted and inverted, what if I could be an owner directly in some fashion? And so I think one thing we should really, really try to figure out is new ownership models. I'd much rather be an owner in Blue Sky directly, for example, as a user, than being an owner of a fraction of a pension fund, which then ultimately invests in an investor that may or may not push Blue Sky to do something I don't like. And there is some people who have been trying to risk, you know, some part of the crypto world has been attempting to do this. I think the experiments, by and large, haven't really worked out. But these experiments are totally useful, and it would be so exciting if we cut out a whole bunch of middlemen to subvert what we actually want. Because, you know, we wouldn't have to fight the venture capital pushes if it was actual ownership as what a shareholder corporation is supposed to be in the first place.
Yeah, I think I always have my eye on the financial collapse, right? Because that's when the shift happened. That's when the banks collapsed, when all of that happened, that's when the programmers moved in. That's when everyone moved from Wall Street over to the Valley, and that's where the investment vehicles came from. That's where we get the big data economy. But the thing that brings me the most joy on the Fediverse is that it's unalgorithmically mediated. I just have a direct experience of other people's lives and experience. I love the little tab you can go to in Mastodon and PixelFed and stuff, where you can just see what's happening around the world right now, everywhere, you know? And someone's getting up and going to work in Japan, someone's having a beer in Amsterdam, someone's taking a nice picture of the bird outside their window in New York or something. That, for me, is this beautiful, unmediated, unalgorithmicized experience, because I can't get that anymore if I'd stayed on commercial social media. It wouldn't give me any of that. It would decide beforehand if I like Japanese cafes and maybe I'd like to see more of them. Or if I looked at one of them, maybe I'd like to see 822 more after that, right? I would get stuck in a loop of endless Japanese cafes that I'd never have a way to get out, which is, you know, that'd be kind of nice in some ways, but maybe not. I'd never get to see the guy having a beer in Amsterdam. And so what I love about it, what brings me the most joy, is that ability to move seamlessly between, here's what's happening around the world. It's like a global view and in everyone's languages that you can translate right there. Here's what's happening on my server, which is full of other people who are like-minded and they're all hacking stuff just like me. That's the part I love. But I have to say, I, over the last, 10 years or so, have cultivated a tech stack that does nothing but bring me joy. And so I kind of live in this blissful world where, I have Linux on my phone and it doesn't listen to me. I never get ads for things that I've said out loud. I live in this totally bizarre space that nobody else seems to inhabit. But it means that, I still love tech and I still love my stuff, but I'm getting accused all the time of being the person who hates technology. Actually, it's not really it. It's just that I've managed to find a whole world that is joyful. So I can say that, having that experience, a blissful experience of getting to be in a place where the algorithms aren't telling you what to do or what to think. No one's there to enrage you. That Japanese cafe isn't there to enrage you. It's not trying to sell you more coffee. It's not trying to make money for somebody else. If you like it, nothing else happens. Nobody gets any richer. Just someone in Japan is like, oh, cool, someone liked my coffee. You know, that to me is a kind of unmediated, direct, human-to-human, powerful experience. And I love that about the Fediverse.
Hell yeah.
Just on the topic of chronological feeds, 100% agree. It's phenomenal. In fact, just to kind of counterbalance that, on the Blue Sky side, there's a way that you can just get your mutuals in one feed, and that is how I always enter Blue Sky. I look at my mutuals feed, I scroll through that, I see what people who interact with me, and I interact with them, just them for a little while, and it is some of the most peaceful stuff. It's like one of the best ways to kind of enter the social media thing. The other thing that brings me a lot of joy, kind of to counterbalance the chronological stuff, is FanPy. It's a Mastodon client, and they have this feature called Catch Up, where you can say between like the last 1 to 12 hours, show me everything everyone has posted and organize it in a way which is really easy to catch up on. And the cool thing about that is it saves all the catch-up stuff. So like once you've done it once, it kind of stores it away and you can come back to it later. So you can choose what you want to catch up on at a specific time in the future or what you want to catch up on right now. And I actually, like, I don't know how to use Mastodon in any other way than using that catch-up feature, because in the morning I will just run a catch-up feature for the last 12 hours. I'll go through a bunch of my friends or like things that I care about. I'll put it away. In the afternoon while I'm having lunch, I'll go to the news profiles and I'll be like, okay, now I'm ready for the news, and I'm gonna like go through the news channels. And it's just been like a really great way to separate my Mastodon experience between things that I care about at certain times. Of course, I'm an addict, so I always have my Mastodon feed running on my laptop, but whenever I'm like ready to catch up, it's a very different state. It's almost like reading the newspaper, but very specific things at specific times, and it's kind of awesome. It brings me a ton of, FanPy brings me so much joy.
Just talking about joy, I have to give a shout out to, like, when I discovered hashtags on Mastodon and Mastodon and Catsodon and Monster Bloom Dawn. Scrolling, and you can just do that stuff all day and it leaves you nothing but, it's literally, it's just pure joy. It's happiness. And to add to the happiness, we went out hiking with the family a couple weeks ago, and it was a Sunday, and I started going through all like the day of the hashtags that there are, and my kids were just rolling their eyeballs at me, and it was a beautiful thing. If you can make your teenagers just question your existence a little bit more, surely we're doing something right.
Yeah. I'll keep it short. Hashtag good lunch. It's always lunch somewhere. It's an amazing hashtag. I love that for you if you haven't been along there yet. And the other thing is that goes a little into like owning your tech stack and like kind of honing it over time. Twitter. I was there very early got like, I don't want us to actually forget that we actually got joy from a lot of these systems over time in different ways, right? A lot of the stuff that Evan has worked on, Identica and other stuff like that, there's people that keep connecting around that, so it's like the people on the other side of those things have always been amazing. And then Tweetbot came along, and it added a bunch of features before Twitter had it, and then it was like, oh God, this is my emotional support 5,000 word mute list. Not a joke. So I'm out in the world rebuilding my mute list to control my experience. An example of something that works cross platforms for words and hashtags and stuff like that, right? So, and I think that's maybe something like, can we do a reclaimer session on all together, coming together and be like, do you know how these tools on your favorite client work? Or you're excitedly going like, well, this is how I do this. Like, basically, you're telling me that, and I'm like, I need to switch to that version, right? Yeah, that's what I got. All of you are on the other side of these tiny rectangular screens, so that's a lot of joy, right?
I think we have time maybe for one more question.
Very, very, very quick. Yeah, like 3 minutes.
What's the number one feature you'd like to see on the Fediverse become like a widespread thing?
Working with Anuj and Bridgie and everyone else on this panel to get cross-protocol groups working.
Yes.
Yeah, Boris stole mine, so.
Come on.
I mean, we could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can make that happen. My number one thing, which I've mentioned a couple times, is ActivityPub API. Like, yes, we need the clients leading the innovation, and it needs to happen yesterday.
100%.
More people discovering the joy that is FETI, more people like having the tools socially and technically to engage and bring it to more people again.
I don't know if this is controversial or not, but I'm going to say end the tyranny of any kind of word character limit, if it's 10 words or if it's 2,000 words or if it's 10,000 words. Just make it all look like we can actually interact with it.
For me, it's independent identity. So I can bring like my personal homepage or something, say, that's me. And I can be the same guy all over the web. And when I meet you, I can meet you on some obscure site that we both didn't know we were going to, and I go like, it's Jazz there. Let's do something together.
All right, well, I think that about wraps it up. Thank you all for joining us today, and thank you all panelists for offering so many insights and sharing your heart, your soul, and your minds. Please check out WeDistribute.org. That's my news organization dedicated to covering the evolution and growth of not just the social web, but the Fediverse, Blue Sky, Noster. You know, there's so many amazing developments happening every single day. I'm just one person and can only write so much, but it really would help me out if more people could put their eyeballs on the page now and then. Thank you.